show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past.
It's a place where I met my wife and my three children were born. And to this day, I'm so proud to call KC home.
A show that looks at Kansas City baseball's present.
Alex with a basket catch. They're going to send the runner. His throw, a great one! Alex Gordon with a tremendous Gold Glove play.
And a show that looks at Kansas City baseball's future.
Kansas City baseball fans eat baseball.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
And welcome into the Kansas City Baseball Vault. I'm Troy Olson. I'm joined, of course, by my partner in crime, Michael Engel. Mike, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good.
This is our second shot at starting this show. That's why if you hear some laughter in my voice, it's been an interesting show already, and we're only 4 minutes in. So hopefully the rest of it will be as entertaining for the listeners as it's been for us. So, of course, we'll be joined by Jeff Herr a little bit later. He's going to call in by phone. He's got lots of people looking at his house. So go buy a house and go buy Jeff's, because then he can come back to the show on a regular basis.
We miss him.
No, because then he has to move. You know, that's one thing that he hasn't even talked about yet. He's got to move at some point.
Yeah, moving a house, I got to imagine, is a lot different than moving an apartment.
Well, I'll tell you, moving an apartment's a disaster, so I can only imagine. But I think most likely he's staying in Kansas City, so that'll be easier. But it's been about a week since our last show. Not a lot of good's happened, but we'll start with what we can deem as good for now, and that is Danny Duffy had two more rehab starts. I did talk to Duffy today. We text back and forth a little bit after his starts typically, and pretty informal, nothing too exciting. But just a couple of notes from him. We'll jump back to – I talked to him a little bit on May 26th. I actually work with a guy he went to high school with, so that was most of that conversation. But I asked him if he knew what his time schedule was for Arkansas, then Omaha, and then the major leagues. Well, we found out today that his time in Arkansas is done. He is headed to Omaha after the start he had today. I texted him today and said, you know, you're up to 70 pitches. How's the arm feel? He says it feels great. He's just trying to get that feel back. It doesn't matter the strategy right now, but more just getting the confidence back and being myself. And, you know, that's one thing that's important that some people forget is, you know, they see him get batted around a little bit and they're like, oh, he's not doing good. But in the minor leagues, they're not out there necessarily trying to get guys out. Of course, I mean, they're trying to get guys out, but that's not priority number one, oddly enough. They're down there to try specific things with specific pitches and take it from there.
Yeah, I mean, he hasn't had a great time during this rehab stint, but they've already seen him go through the minor leagues once. I mean, obviously they promoted him in 2011. They had him in the rotation in 2012. So they were fine. It's not a problem. You know, they know what he's going to be about. What they're looking at right now is just getting him back on the mound, get him back to game speed, and work his pitch count up. His first time out, he threw 64 pitches is what it was. They had him on a 60 pitch count, and the last two, it's been around 75. So they're just going to try to, you know, incrementally work it up. And in that time, they just want to see what he's able to do and how much command he has, how well he can hit the strike zone, how well he's throwing all of his pitches. So they're not really concerned about the results. You know, I think the only thing that they would be worried about is if he went out there and still threw 70 pitches, but it was only in, you know, 2.1 innings and everybody's hitting him and he's walking everybody. You know, he hasn't walked that many. He's walked 4 in 10.2 innings in these three rehab starts, which isn't bad. It's not good. But at the same time, he struck out 15. So he's got a lot of things working for him. The velocity is supposed to be there from what I'm hearing. And you're right. It's a lot of it is just confidence in not only that you can go out there and throw the ball again, but that you can throw it the same way that you did without getting hurt. You know, you hear it in the NFL all the time where a guy comes back from some kind of knee injury, and the question is, you know, can they go full speed, or is it going to be in the back of their head that they let up a bit so they don't get hurt? And it's the same thing with pitching. You know, I think that's something that John Lamb may have run into in his trip back during his rehab over the last 2 years where, you know, he comes back and his velocity wasn't very high at all. Now it's kind of starting to work back because I think he's getting more confident in his ability to throw it, and he's maybe not worried about being injured. Duffy, it seems, you know, he's just kind of going out there and letting it loose, which, you know, if from talking to Danny Duffy, that seems like the kind of guy he's going to be.
And that is pretty much on point. And like we mentioned, he is headed to Omaha, so it'll be big to see how things go. I asked him if he felt like his pitches were working. He says, yeah, everything's working great, no complaints. And then I said, you know, keep it rocking, and I was off to record the show. So I did mention to him if he wanted to call in, he could, but he said he was getting on a plane, and that's when we found out that he was headed to Omaha. So I would rather him go to Omaha than be on this show, honestly, because that means he's one step closer to the big leagues. And let's talk about something that you and I talk about a lot on the email chains, and that's, you know, we all love Danny Duffy because he's easy to love. He's an easy guy to like.
Mm-hmm.
But are the fans putting too much stock in what Duffy brings to this team?
I think they could be. You know, a lot of what you hear is, you know, before the season, they're talking, well, you know, if we can get through into July and the team's playing well, then we're going to get Duffy and Paulino back around July. And, yeah, that's true. We're probably going to see Duffy back around that. But there's, you know, just the matter of he's got to return to where he was, which even where he was wasn't, you know, great. It wasn't like he came in and he was Matt Moore, who, you know, was nailing everybody, or David Price. You know, he struggled a little bit in 2011. You know, he had some control problems. He struck out enough guys, but, you know, he wasn't lights out. And the same thing last year. He struck out a good amount of players, or he struck out a lot of batters, but he walked a lot as well. And he kind of got a little bit lucky on some of the base hits that got through in, you know, six starts. So he never really was around for some of that to correct out or for him to make any leaps. So I think what you're kind of looking for is if he can be a number three starter type, you know, and a left-hander throws hard, something like that, that's going to be fine. But he can't jump right into that, I don't think, because most of the time when you look at players who are coming back from Tommy John surgery, the first few months that they're back and actually in the big leagues, they're not always as sharp. They're just not always as good. It's usually about a year and a half before they finally get to be full strength, to where everything's working again. So there's going to be some adjustment that he's still going to have to make. And then on top of that, he's got to return to where he was when he was injured. And then at that point, he can exceed to where, you know, what maybe we think. I think a lot of people are really thinking he's going to come in and be a number one guy. And he's never really profiled at any stage in the minor leagues as a number one guy. He's always been, you know, number two, number three ceiling, which is good. I mean, if you can get that out of a high school pitcher that you draft, that's fantastic. But I think that, you know, they're kind of overestimating what he's going to be able to do when he comes right in. And that could be disappointing for him if it turns out that he struggles when he comes back to the majors.
And it will be indeed interesting to see. Let's see. And then, so he'll be in Omaha. We'll see what happens with him there. And we'll have plenty more to talk about on that coming up here in the next few weeks. I was looking stuff up, so I went off of our sheet here. But Ventura is up in AAA as well. Aaron Brooks promoted to AA. I would say that if you listen to this show, you probably know quite a bit about Ventura. Let's talk about Aaron Brooks. What does he bring to this organization, and is that somebody we need to be watching for the next couple of years?
Well, he's a kind of a different case because he's already 23. He turned 23 back in April. He was a ninth-round pick in 2011, came out of Cal State and San Bernardino. So he's a college pitcher, started right out in the rookie league. The thing that I like about him is that he doesn't walk a lot of batters. You know, he's pitched about 290 innings. He's walked 45 batters. And that's really good. That's 1.4 batters per 9 innings. That's going to do all right. If he can start every time out, you know, at some point, if he's pitching, you know, 6 innings a game and he's only walking one guy every game, that's not bad. You'll take that. His strikeouts, as he's been promoted, his strikeout rate has gone down a little bit, which you expect because the hitters get more advanced. So he's kind of getting old, but at 23 in AA, that's not really old for the level. That's about right on where you're looking. He's somebody who, you know, I would think probably kind of a swing guy. He might be a number four, number five guy if he makes it up. Could be a long relief type, you know, thinking like Nate Adcock, someone like that. But that walk rate is really intriguing to me. I think anytime you have a guy who can do that, you know, you've got an opportunity to have some success because it shows you're throwing strikes. You know, you're not going to be putting batters on that you don't need to. And it gives you that opportunity to really limit the damage if somebody does start hitting the ball. And that's another thing. In Wilmington, he's given up less hits per nine innings than he did at Kane County last year. So maybe there's something coming around on him. I don't think you can really peg him to be like an impact prospect. You know, you're looking at him, maybe he's in the top 30, or maybe just the top 30 pitchers. So, you know, you're kind of limited on what you're going to get out of him. But, you know, again, guy who doesn't walk any and can start, he's going to get a look. And I think they're willing to take a look at him at AA and see what he can do. And, you know, hopefully it turns out the best for him, and the Royals maybe find somebody else who can be on that tree that they pluck off and pull a pitcher in.
And it'll be interesting to see because it does seem that pitching's doing fine in, you know, this year, but it'll be interesting to see how that looks the next couple of years, especially after players start dropping off contracts. And you know, next year's starting rotation is going to be entirely different than this one. I guess it won't be entirely different, but you think you'd lose Santana. 2 years from now, mm-hmm. you'd be out of Shields as well. So you're hoping that a few of these guys pan out pretty well, because if they don't,
yeah,
then you're in trouble.
You've got a lot of problems. And yeah, I think next year it's going to be they're probably not going to keep Santana, but they'll have Shields and Guthrie back. You really hope Wade Davis can figure it out. You know, who knows? Then you've always got, you know, Duffy and Paulino. And by that time, by, you know, next year, as long as there are no setbacks and no other complications or problems, yeah, then you're looking at a couple of guys who can come back, and they get in 2-3 months of pitching here. Maybe that's 8, 9, 10 starts. And then they get the full off season where they can get back into normal rhythm. They can come into spring training. They have every opportunity to be the next guys in the rotation. So you're looking at, you know, Wade Davis is your five. Maybe you have Duffy as your number four. Paulino can be the three, Guthrie two, Shields one. That's not too bad. I mean, I'm willing to take that as long as nobody has any, you know, further injuries, as long as Shields doesn't get hurt or Guthrie doesn't completely fall off and you don't run into any problems like that. Ideally, you'd have somebody like Yordano Ventura or Kyle Zimmer who can make some big leaps and maybe supplant Wade Davis and shift him into the bullpen. Because I'm not really sure if he's going to be there at the end of this year anyway. Maybe not the end of the month, the way things are going with him.
Well, and Yordano Ventura, obviously in AAA, that's somebody they're looking at, but I don't believe he's currently on the 40-man. Granted, there's plenty
of... he's not.
There's plenty of people you could kick out to make space.
Yeah.
But
I can name about five off the top of my head.
The team's 9 games under .500, so as much as the fans hate to hear it, you start looking at the... at the time issues and keeping players for another year, because this year is fixing to be a lost year very, very quickly here.
Yeah, and this homestand is really important for that, too. They're playing some pretty bad teams, the Twins, Astros, and White Sox, all beatable. I mean, there's no reason for them to not win each series with the talent that they have. And the way they're playing, it's pretty tentative. It's not looking very comfortable out there.
Let's talk about a little bit about how important this homestand is. The Royals are in the middle, are in the process of setting a new record for consecutive home losses.
Yeah.
Because they're still, that streak is still continuing. It has not been broken.
Yeah, they've
yet.
Got 11 in a row, and that's after last year where they won or they lost 10 in a row, and you really figured that wasn't going to happen again, and lo and behold, same old song.
And I remember, I have this app called Time Hop that tells me tweets I had last year versus this year. This is the same old song. Last year, you know what? This time last year, they had the number one road record in baseball. They had one of the worst records at home, if not the worst, but they had the number one road record in baseball. If they had just played .500 ball at home, they would have been leading the division at this time last year.
That's crazy.
So I don't know what to take away from that, but we're about to dive into a whole lot of negative stuff.
Yeah.
So before we get into this mess of poo that is the Royals, we're going to take a quick break. I want to give you guys a trivia question that we haven't had one in a while, and I'll give as many until I run out. We'll say 10 winners on this one. Mail in to KansasCityBaseballVault@gmail.com or send them to Twitter @KCBaseballVault. But here's the trivia question. I'm looking for one specific Royal. What big-name Royal was drafted by the Diamondbacks in the 1997 expansion draft? It's easy to find. I won't tell you the round, but he was out there. He wasn't taken from the Royals at the time, but there was a major Royal that was taken in the expansion draft by the Diamondbacks. Who is that Royal? And we'll get that next week, and hopefully we'll have some winners, because we haven't had anybody actually try for any of. And I know people listen. They just don't try for the trivia questions. So gift certificates to Kelly's on the line for anybody that can get that. Also, a quick note, I have changed my Twitter handle. It is @TroyAOF. It was my original Twitter handle. That's @Apple, October, F February. It's what I was before I was Casey Royal Man, and it's what I went back to. And honestly, I would have done it before, but stupid Chris Kamler took the wind out of my sails and did his. And then I was like, well, now I can't just do it because everybody's thinking I'm going to copy fake Ned, and that wasn't what it was about. Anyways, I'd actually been talking about doing mine for a while. I just, you know, for me, what kept me so long on it was Ross Martin said, you know, when I had dumped the costume, he had said, you know, somebody asked if I was going to get rid of the Twitter handle too, and he said, you know, there's really no reason for him to, because it's still who he is. It's just he's just not wearing the costume. And I really stuck to that, and I kept to that, and kept the handle for a long time. But I just feel that I'm not that person, and honestly, I get to be. The last week kind of opened up things for me after I had the rant. You know, I had some people say that I'd become a real asshole and what have you. And you know what? I'm okay with
become.
That because maybe I had kept it held back a little bit when I was Casey Royal Man, but I'm ready to let the freak flag fly now. So this is who I am, and it's going to be what it is. And it's still going to be primarily a Twitter or primarily a sports account, but I'm not going to really worry about any of it. I'm just going to have fun with it, and we're going to see where it goes. Of course, you can follow Michael Engel @MichaelEngel and @KingsOfKaufman, both very important.
I'm actually going to change my Twitter handle as well. It's going to be to Stinky Pants McGee.
I would love that. That would be, but that one's probably.
That's got to be taken. Yeah, I'm not really changing my handle. I already have one. That's fine.
You've got friggin' Engel for when you want to have a little bit of fun that you don't want on your primary account.
That one doesn't count. Don't follow that one, kids.
Yeah, if you're under 18, definitely don't follow.
You make it sound like that's not what that's about. It's
a drinking account.
Yeah.
And a lot of parents get upset when their kids follow the accounts that we have that involve swearing and drinking.
They got some problems then. Because if you tune into late night Twitter, you pretty much it's like me and Scobie and Ross, and we're talking about Anna Kendrick.
Yeah,
pretty much what it's been with the Royals losing.
Or who is the Snow one? Brittany Snow. Yeah,
I only know her from them talking about her.
I didn't have any clue who she was. She was apparently in a whole bunch of movies I never want to see, and was in a TV series I never watched. So there you go. But anyways, let's get to a commercial and we'll come right back and talk more Royals. What major Royal was taken by the Diamondbacks for some free Kellys? And I'll give you a clue. He apparently was playing for the Pirates when they took him. So what Royal was taken by the Diamondbacks in the 1997 expansion draft? We'll be right back after this.
Come to Spit Cup this week. We'll let the person who has the highest bar tab ride the bull. We don't have any TVs in our bar, but we make our own entertainment. Mondays, it's free cover charge to anybody with a gun rack in their pickup truck. Tuesdays, we've got $8 beer night. All domestic beers are on special for only $8. It's Spit Cup. Wednesdays is longest tobacco spit. Thursdays is foot fungus night. Friday night is jamboree night. Bring your crap kick in your 10-gallon hats. And this weekend, you get our world-famous Spit Cup girls. You get to pick which one has the most teeth. It's Spit Cup.
No love letters, talking to the wall.
Or you could go to Kelly's Westport Inn. The highest quality drinks with the lowest prices. You know what we do. Drinks, friends, plenty of TV showing sports. They've got all the basketball and all the baseball on. Live music on the weekends. The best pizza in Kansas City and fun. Kelly's has the best rooftop patio in town and is voted one of the best places in Kansas City to check out the view, if you know what I mean, and maybe make a new friend. Make the best choice for your evening entertainment, Kelly's Westport Inn. Kelly's is at 500 Westport Road in Kansas City, Missouri. Kelly's Westport Inn. Tell them the Royal Man Report sent you.
And welcome back to Kansas City Baseball Vault. Just a little note on that trivia question. That player actually never played for the Diamondbacks. He was drafted by the Diamondbacks from the Pirates, but he was traded before the season started, never played for the Diamondbacks. What former Royal, drafted by the Diamondbacks from the Royals in the expansion draft in 1997, but never played for the Diamondbacks? So there you go. It's all there. It's easy to find, too, because I literally found it looking for something else. So that's out there. Back to the Royals, because that's always fun to talk about.
Yeah.
Hey, George Brett's a coach for the Royals. He replaces Maloof and Andre David, and that sent me into a tirade. Not because I have anything against George Brett. I like George Brett a lot. He's a great player, greatest, you know, Royal of all time, all that good stuff. But the fact that they didn't fire Maloof and Andre David is a slap in the face of the fans, and the fact that they didn't relieve Yost at the same time. I would be much more excited if Brett was replacing Yost for the rest of the season. Not saying that Brett would be a good manager, but, you know, he might be able to get in these kids' heads, and maybe he can as the hitting coach. But it's a temporary position, and it's a smokescreen by the administration, and if you're falling for it, you should be embarrassed, and you should be angry at this organization right now. At least that's my opinion.
I don't know why. Angry. I mean, they had to make a change. There is so many different things. You look at what the Royals are doing offensively, which is basically nothing. And then, you know, right in the middle of all this, Jack Maloof comes out and starts talking about whatever nonsense about how the Royals can't hit homers because their stadium's bad, but other teams can hit homers in the same stadium because they're used to swinging to try to hit homers and things like. I didn't follow his logic at all in the comments. And this is an article on Fox Sports Kansas City. And, you know, lo and behold, the next day, you know, he gets fired. It's just really weird. I mean, the whole scenario with these hitting coaches, you know, you have Seitzer fired at the end of last year, which was probably justified because the Royals did finish 12th in the American League in runs scored. And, you know, Hosmer and Moustakas both took steps back. Someone's got to fall on the sword, and Seitzer just happened to be the guy. You know, then you have Maloof and Andre David. They both come in, and you know, part of the idea was that this team was going to be capable of hitting homers. And you know, 2 months later, they're turning around and trying to come up with weird excuses for why they can't. And you know, I don't know. It's such a weird scenario for them in the way that they were taken out. I don't know, you know, why they didn't just outright fire him, but I can't imagine they put them right back into an instructing role. I think they're probably just kind of biding their time. I don't know this officially. I don't know. I mean, they could have put them in Lexington for all I know. I have no idea. But it just seems like something where they're giving them time off and kind of letting that cool down, and then maybe I don't know what they're going to do. But I can't imagine they're going to go from, you know, being relieved of their role and throw them right back in. They could, though. I mean, you never know. It's the Royals.
They absolutely could, and that's why you should be angry, because they're even in this organization. If I go down to a rookie league game at the end of this month, and Andre David and Jack Maloof are there doing anything, I may lose my mind.
Yeah.
And And the fact that the organization threw up this huge smoke screen of putting the greatest Royal of all time in as a hitting coach to try to make you remember how bad, make you forget, I'm sorry, how bad this team currently is and how they've got a manager that's totally incompetent, was totally incompetent in Milwaukee in a playoff run, has been proven that he is not a playoff caliber manager. That they still have done nothing to even try to fix Hosmer or Moustakas. Of course, you could say that's what Brett's doing, but those guys need a trip to AAA. And I'm never the guy to say that, but it's time. They need to figure something out, and it's not happening. And that's what made me so angry. And I was on my way home from work. I wait tables again at Cracker Barrel. Because there's no IT jobs in Flagstaff. I was on
people
my
have
home.
The internet in Flagstaff.
Apparently, because I'm using it. And we also have beautiful weather, kids. It's fantastic this time of year. I'm not looking forward to the summer or the winter, but this time of year it's pretty awesome. But anyways, I stopped at Sonic because it was still happy hour, and it was about 5 o'clock your guys' time. And I start reading my emails while I'm waiting for my drink, and I read the emails from you guys, and I just was getting hotter and hotter by the minute, and then got home and just spewed it all over the internet. And there was people that said, I never liked this guy when he wore a cape, but he's on the mark now. And you know what? I'll take that.
I don't know. I wasn't really angry. I was just kind of surprised at the whole thing. You know, it's a PR thing. I mean, they've set up Brett so that the only thing he can do is succeed. You know, they pretty much put him in at the lowest point of the offensive performance of this team. If they turn it around, he fits nicely into that narrative of how they came back. It's perfect for it. Plus, it does take some attention off of the other problems. It, you know, you look at the first few games right after, and you know every other pitch they're going to George Brett the dugout. Yeah, that is a distraction. It's a misdirection, and it's fair to call him out on that. I also think
the fans for a fool on it.
I don't think so. I think everybody kind of sees it for that. I they're not really coming out saying that he knows exactly what he's going to do. You know, it's not like he's marching in saying, I know every answer. He's coming in pretty much saying the opposite. But I think that they can learn something from him. I mean, Brett was a guy who, at a certain point, he was having a lot of troubles himself. And it's, you know, notable that he worked with Charlie Lau, and Charlie Lau got him set up, and, you know, then he became the hitter that he is. Plus, he's a guy who just automatically, you know, look, Jack Maloof had 8 home runs in his professional career, all in the minor leagues. You know, if he's yelling at me, you know, I might take it seriously just because he's the coach. But if George Brett's yelling at me to do something, I'm going to listen a lot more. Now, the question is, can he actually instruct? That's kind of what we're going to see. And he said he's going to give it a month, see what happens. If they improve, maybe he'll keep doing it. If they don't improve, he's got that interim tag, and he can just say, well, you know, it's really not what's for me. I'm going to step away. And, you know, so they've set him up so that he cannot fail. And I, you know, from their standpoint, I see that. That's fine. I'm not going to have a problem with that. You know, I do think Yost probably should have been gone a long time ago. If nothing else, just to get somebody else in. I feel like Yost is completely lost just about everybody on the team. You know, I mean, teams with this kind of talent don't go into the tank for this long without something being out there. And it's either he's not holding them accountable, or he's not approaching it in the same way, or they just don't respect him or something. I don't know what it is, but I really think that there's a lot of disconnect in there. And you kind of see it with what Maloof said, because he comes out and he's talking the complete opposite of what Yost was talking about last October after they fired Kevin Seitzer. You know, it's the complete opposite, you know, perspective of how to develop these guys. And so, you know, it almost feels like it's a little dysfunctional, and, you know, sometimes you've got to make that move. And Yost is kind of the first guy that they're going to target. At this point, he's obviously the first guy they're going to target if they make any more changes.
It reminds me of two times in the last 10 years in my sports life. One on this Royals team, it's Trey Hillman all over again. The only difference is Ned is better with the media because he's condescending and he's confident, whereas Trey was just lost.
Yeah, I mean, Trey was never a big leaguer, and Yost, I think, kind of has – he's just more confident.
And then the other one is from the Nebraska side of things is Frank Solich. And he was winning, and he had to go because I knew – I don't know anybody in the locker room for the Royals, but I knew people in the locker room for the Huskers, and it's just like you were talking about. Solich had lost the team. And they just didn't care anymore. They weren't going out. They weren't going to play for themselves, and they weren't going to play for him. And I don't know. I mean, it says something about the caliber of player too, that you can't overcome that. But these guys are not playing up to their ability for Ned by any means.
No, they're not. I mean, it's just frustrating. It's so frustrating to just sit there and try to watch, and they score two runs. You know, you see Shields go out there and he gives up one run and they lose, and Santana gives up one run and they lose, and it's just, and even the guys they're facing, Jordan Lyles, you know, Billy Buckner.
Didn't he have a ball go through his legs for the Red Sox a few years back?
That's a dumb joke. Come on, man. But I mean, these guys who aren't any good. Last night it was Samuel DeDuno. You know, these are guys who are her perennial number five guys. They're the guys that you call up as injury replacements, as your last guy to just get them one start. It just doesn't work. I mean, the Royals have faced a couple of guys, and then right after they've ended up going back to the minors. You know, and even with Buckner, he pitched five shutout innings, and they reward him by sending him they designate him for assignment and send him to AAA. So they just can't hit. It's the weirdest thing, because you know that Alex Gordon can hit, and they completely wasted the hottest stretch of the year for him by having him bat third, and so many times he came up with nobody on and two outs, and it was just terrible. You know, Butler's getting pitched around because he's got nobody hitting behind him, so he's second in the American League in walks, but doesn't do any good. He's still, you know, he has as many home runs as Brett Gardner of the Yankees, and he's a speed and defense outfielder. You know, he's not Billy Butler. He's not a guy who could have been in the home run derby last year. So there's a lot of just a lot of things going absolutely wrong here. And, you know, not just Hosmer and Moustakas, their struggles are clear, but Alcides Escobar has been terrible the last month. Lorenzo Cain seems like he can't catch anything if it's not, you know, barreled up right over the plate. If it's outside, he's, you know, he's just not hitting it well. And, you know, neither Escobar nor Cain have really been called out because the struggles with Hosmer and Moustakas have been so bad. It's really kind of confusing, and they got to do something. I think Cain will be fine because he's been getting enough hits here and there. Escobar, he's moved down to ninth in the order tonight, so we'll see kind of if that takes some pressure off of him. But you look at Moustakas, a month ago he was hitting about 180. You know, he was doing just about the same he was doing now. If they'd have sent him down at that point and say, hey, take a month, get yourself right, and come back, he'd be back by now, assuming that, you know, everything was looking okay. So they really kind of dragged their feet on that. And if you look at the record over the last month, it's not like they could have done any worse. You know, I don't know why you can't just call up Irving Falu or Johnny Giovitella and just, you know, see what happens. You know, go with Anthony Cerutelli. You know, see what he can do. He's hitting everything down there. He's hitting 300 right now. You look at him last year, he was second to only Will Myers on the Storm Chasers in home runs. And, you know, no one ever really talks about him. You know, I think he could come up and at least inject some energy, do something. Because right now they're doing absolutely nothing. They're just throwing out the exact same guys every time out. You know, they kind of switch up Frank Gore, and, you know, they brought up David Lowe after Jerrod Dyson got hurt, but essentially it's still the same team from opening day, and, you know, clearly that team is not hitting the ball or scoring runs.
Yeah, well, it just, I guess it is what it is, and it does need some life, and maybe they'll get that because there have been some moves made, and it'll probably take a couple of days for him to get back. But Sal Perez, the savior, has returned from bereavement leave, yeah. And I'm not taking the fact that he lost his grandmother lightly at all, because I've been through family deaths and it's not cool. So But I'm glad to see him back. Herrera's back up, so Mike, you'll get to see your favorite pitcher give up some more 95-mile-an-hour home runs.
I don't think he's going to do that. He's probably got it right.
I think they sent him down for all the right reasons, but it was funny that the argument they made for sending him down was that he had seemed to have just lost it. He was always
they said he'd lost his confidence, and it wasn't a thing about he's given up 8 homers in 20 innings. It was he's lost his confidence. I mean, I don't remember who said it. I think it was Kevin Agee who mentioned it's like, why are they talking about everything except performance and why people are struggling?
Well, see, and the quote I read from Yost, and this isn't a direct quote, but it was something to the extent of he's lost his confidence. Every time he's out there pitching, he's seeing another home run go out, and then he's given up one. So it was performance based on him, but you could say the same thing about Hosmer, because Hosmer's swinging at everything. You know, a lot of what he puts is over the top, but BH and Depmo put one tweet that I really liked yesterday, and he showed a picture of where Hosmer was swinging on strike threes.
I'm gonna put that on, if you're listening to the podcast on Kings of Coffin, I'll put that image on here, because it's, oh my goodness.
It's ridiculous.
It's terrible, and it's like they weren't good swings. Like, you can kind of understand if somebody goes out of the zone to swing at a ball if it's a good swing. Like, if somebody comes in and you put a really good rip on it and maybe you miss it, that's fine, but these are like halfway check swing, diving off balance swings, and at a pitch that is a foot off the plate. And man, you know, early in the year he was showing pretty good plate discipline, and it was getting him on base a bit. And you know, I think he's gotten impatient, and maybe he's starting to press again. It's kind of around the same time last year where he got really out of whack, and you know, he had that bad luck early last year, but then around June, you know, you can't give him a pass anymore. He starts pressing. I don't know.
It'll be interesting, but yeah, check out that picture if you haven't seen it. So this turned into quite the conversation in our little email feed that we have with the three of us, Jeff and you and myself, and then David Leske, who got in there a while back, long story, but he continues on our show feed. And Quentin Berry was signed or claimed off waivers, however you want to say it, and then optioned to AAA. And I was like, Quentin Berry? And that turned into this whole thing about who Quentin Berry was. I wasn't asking who he was. I know who Quentin Berry is. My question is why? Why?
I don't know. I mean, I didn't realize he had an option left when they claimed him. So I thought right when they claimed him, I was like, well, what are they doing here? You know, because Quentin Berry is basically a speed and defense guy who's not really that great at the defense. He's good. And he's fine, you know, but he's not a gold glove guy. You know, he doesn't really hit. He wasn't hitting at AAA when the Tigers designated him for assignment. I think they just picked him up to get some depth at Omaha and maybe have another guy. You know, they were playing Johnny Giovitello in left field and Anthony Ceritelli in right field for a lot of the time. And, you know, they didn't really have a lot of guys in the outfield that are regular outfielders. And so maybe that gives them the opportunity to throw Giovitello back on the infield, or Ceritelli can come in and play the infield. But I don't know why they picked him up. They did. Dayton Moore likes the fast guys, I guess.
He likes something, but it's not winning baseball, I'll tell you that.
Apparently not.
And then we have talked a little bit about the Royals' home run and scoring issues, so I don't think we need to dwell on that anymore. Everybody's aware this team can't score. Thing of teams that can't score, by the way, I don't know if you've noticed this or not. I saw somebody tweet about it, so I pulled it open. But the White Sox in Seattle are in the 12th inning, and nobody's put a run up.
Really?
Yeah,
that's awesome.
I'm gonna try to pull up the game day here real quick while we're on this and just look at the box real quick, because it's got to be quite the.
It kind of feels like the Royals would find a way to get a negative run.
You know, yeah, or they would be the team to lose that 1-0 in like the 18th inning
sure,
or something.
It'd be the guy like Quentin Berry would probably get the hit.
Or it probably wouldn't be it probably won't be 1-0. It'd be like it'd be at Kansas City and they'd give up 5 runs before they could get it done. But now we're just being negative Nancys. But
I don't know. The pitching's been okay, but
that's until late. And then,
it just depends on who you bring in. If you're bringing in J.C. Gutierrez, yeah, you're going to have some problems.
while I'm bringing this up, why don't you talk a little bit about the 7-hour rain delay and how that happened, happened, and all that, because it shouldn't have. It should have been a Royals loss. I know the fans don't want to hear that, but what a mess that was. Go ahead and talk about that.
It was that last game of the series against St. Louis when they were in St. Louis, and you know, the game was already delayed by an hour because of rain, and then you end up with this. You know, there's always the threat of rain there. The Royals play up, you know, they're down 2-1. And then finally, they get to the point where, you know, they get some runners on. Jeff Francoeur ties it off Mitchell Boggs, which sent Cardinals fans on Twitter into a tizzy because he's their favorite. And it ended up being pretty crazy because, you know, they get some runners on. Eric Hosmer hits a double down the line. They score two. The Royals go up. And then Chris Getz gets intentionally walked, and the rains just open up and pour down on everything. Just it's terrible. And so they put the tarp on the field. You know, they get everything ready. And so they, you know, they start checking in. It's like, okay, there's this huge system outside St. Louis and it's just starting. And so they're kind of looking at it, and they're checking things out. And every about half hour on TV, people start kind of talking about, okay, well, here's what's, you know, here's the latest update. And, man, I mean, it just kept going and going and going. And then it started looking like things were going to clear up, and then it would start raining again. And it would clear up, and it would start raining again. And then finally, they get the field back into playable shape. The grounds crew was taking their good sweet time. It's 2 a.m. at this point. And Jeremy Guthrie picks up a bag of the dry dust stuff. Alex Gordon picks one up. He's raking the field. You know, the Royals are out there helping to get things ready. They finally get the game going. Greg Holland gets 3 ground outs, and the Royals end up winning. But the weird, quirky thing was that there's a rule that in that situation, normally if you've got another game in the series against that team, you can pick it up at the point where play was stopped. You know, you suspend the game, you come back later, you finish it off. But because this was the final game between the two teams all year, the rule, there's a part of the rule that says that the game would revert to the last completed inning, which would have been the 8th inning, before the Royals tied it and took the lead. So the Royals feasibly could have outscored the Cardinals and lost, which would be pretty much exactly how this season would be going if that would have happened. But, you know, I think baseball, they wanted to do the best they could to avoid that because, you know, that's a pretty bad PR thing. That's, everybody's going to be talking about that if you've got a rule that makes a team lose that actually takes the lead. And so, yeah, the Royals end up winning the game at, you know, 3:15 in the morning or something like that. So
I had worked from 7 to 2 Arizona time, which is the same as Pacific right now. And so I'd come home, I'd watched part of the game, listened to part of it, and then I dozed off with my phone in my hand, you know, with Twitter on and my tablet next to me watching on MLB.TV. I wake up and I was like, are they, MLB TV doesn't do replays. Why is this game still on? Because it's still on.
Yeah.
Because it's not over. I had slept for 4 hours or something, 3 or 4 hours, and I had fallen asleep before the Royals had taken the lead, so I had figured they'd lost the game, you know. And I wake up, and that game is still going, and it's like, I agree with the Cardinal fans that they should have called the game, they should have rolled it back to the 8th inning, and I don't know, I mean, you spin it as what it is. Look, baseball is a complete game after 4.5 innings, and, you know, we have rain delays where teams win, where the home team wins after 4.5, and it just happens. That's the way it is. You know, there's times when scores get rolled back and an inning never happened. There's times when a game never happened. And honestly, I thought that's what they should have done. Umpire apparently didn't want to go home and see his wife. Cool by me. We stuck around for, you know, a few hours, and the Royals get the win, and that's a big thing. And I don't know if the Cardinals won the next game or not. The Royals went down and got thunked, but that's a lot to ask of a team that's in a true pennant race, and that being the Cardinals, to hang around that long. Fortunately, they were at home. I don't know if they had to go on the road or not. I don't really care. But,
who cares?
You know,
Cardinals.
There was a good argument for that, but Yeah, I there's really not much to say on that other than it was ugly, but it is what it is.
Yeah, it was really, really, really ugly. Yeah, I mean, it's past the time in between all that. There was a certain point where I was like, well, maybe I should go to bed. And then they popped back on and they were like, well, we're going to half an hour. They're going to give us an update and stuff. And so to pass the time on Twitter, we were just going. We did the hashtag Royals rain delay to, you know, theoretically, what are the Royals doing in the clubhouse during all this? And you get things like J.C. Gutierrez playing Angry Birds or something, and trying to find some of them, but it's a mess because people did all kinds of stuff. So.
This, of course, while that's going on, of course, before that series even started, the weirdness had already started because the Royals bus ride, a Royals bus trip or something like that hashtag had popped up because the Royals plane broke down because the season hadn't broken down enough already. Right. Their plane broke down and they had to take a bus from Kansas City to St. Louis. Granted, it's a 4-hour drive, but still, it's kind of funny that you have to have professional baseball players taking a bus because you can't get a damn working plane.
Well, yeah, and Jeremy Guthrie had joked that they were going to Omaha instead of St. Louis, which, you know.
I'm sure that set off quite the...
Yeah, well, I mean, could you blame them?
It fits the way they were playing. It definitely would fit.
Yeah.
While you're finding that as well, the White Sox have now moved on to the bottom of the 12th. Seattle's now batting. The White Sox had one on but could not bring it home. So Seattle's just taken over. The Sox the Sox Mariners are down the bottom of the 12th. Mariners batting. The Sox have 0 runs on 7 hits. The Mariners 0 runs on 10 hits. Again, this is the bottom of the 12th as we're recording this. The White Sox pitcher Axelrod only did a 5 1/3, and then they went to the bullpen early there. So they had used 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 pitchers, with each pitcher getting around an inning, a little less, a little more, with Crane being the big guy at 1.2 innings. But they had burned they've already burned 6 pitchers because they had to go to the bullpen early. Seattle, on the other hand, got 8 innings out of Iakuma, but then they went to the pen and really didn't use very many of their guys, didn't use their guys for very long. Caps an inning, Medina an inning, .2, but the other 3 relievers they've had out only pitched, and all pitched less than an inning. And if this game goes on much longer, that might come back to bite them because they're going to be out of pitchers.
Okay, here's some Royals rain delay things. Hunter Samuels, he had a bunch of good ones. Miguel Tejada.
He's a clever guy.
Oh, yeah. Miguel Tejada regales the team with a story of how he got a hit off of Cy Young. Jeff Francoeur, Lewis Coleman, and Greg Holland sit down to Skype with Danny Duffy as he walks them through Rosetta Stone, how to speak gnar. Mike Vimosi says, Lewis Coleman and J.C. Gutierrez challenge one another to a spelling contest since they missed the spelling bee on TV. Let's see. Jared Speckman, Spec 60, said Ned Yost updates his resume on Monster.com. The Royals ball boy says Billy Butler is taking shirtless selfies while Bruce Chen tells Chen music jokes. Frenchie's just grinning like a psycho.
That pretty well fits.
Yeah, yeah. Here's one. Alex Gordon has already hit the weight room half a dozen times. Luis Mendoza is sharing his hair care secrets with Aaron Crow. Here's one that I threw out there. Hosmer, Moose, and Getz join up with Kane and pretend to be the Ghostbusters. Tim Collin tries to join in as Lewis Tully. Royals rain delay.
Oh, always something. But remember, rain delays bring out the best in Royals fans. That's how Country Breakfast came to
and
be.
That's what the game felt like. It really felt like that because you're just kind of hanging out and waiting and seeing what happens.
I guess that wasn't a rain delay. That was a Fox Sports screw-up. But it happened because of a rain delay earlier in the game.
Yep.
Because it had pushed the game so late, and apparently they had sent everybody home at Fox and forgot to turn off the street ball kick in at 1 a.m. or whatever.
Yeah, it was right at midnight.
So whatever it was crazy. And you got to love that kind of stuff. And that's where Twitter is so valuable. And for as frustrated as I get with people and think that I'm going to, you know, just quit using Twitter, then it's days like that that just make me laugh. So
that's how you find your coping mechanism, because the thing that everybody's following now is cute emergency, which is just pictures of kittens and puppies.
Yeah,
You know what? It helps. It distracts you because the Royals stink, but kittens and puppies don't stink.
Ever. And I have one. I have a cute emergency living in my house now ever since we've taken in this baby kitten that we nursed back to health and stuff. And one of my adult male kittens has taken to mothering him. It's pretty funny. I always thought that cat was gay anyways. I'm pretty sure of it now. So
good for him.
You know, he's just proud of it too.
Hey, let the freak flag fly.
And then the last note we're going to talk about, because nothing's come out of it. And actually, I got into a conversation with Tracy Ringlesby, and if you don't know who that is, he's a great baseball guy. He's old school, and he's worked for the Rockies pretty much since they've existed. He's a Cowboy. If you follow him on Twitter, it's @RootSports_TR. He's the pregame postgame analysis for Rockies telecast. He used to be involved with the telecast on Fox, I think, but he's from Wyoming, Christian man. But that's all stuff that comes out of his Twitter. But he jumped in on a conversation that I was having with Logan Burndine, who works for the Sweet Spot Network, talking about what's going to come out of this PED mess. And Tracy brought up some good points that, you know, what kind of the Bud's going to have trouble suspending these guys like he wants to. If you haven't heard, there's major names coming out, including Milky Cabrera, if you want to tie it into the Royals. But more importantly, MVP, that's spelled MVPEE, Ryan Braun is, of course, named on this list, Alex Rodriguez. All these guys are potentially looking at 100-game suspensions right now, is what Bud's saying. He's saying, they're going to get the first offense for actually doing the drugs and a second offense for lying about it, which he apparently can do under the collective bargaining. Of course, the union's going to come back firing. Yeah. And that's where the conversation started, was Logan's like, there's no way the MLB union lets this happen because the union's so strong. But the thing is, the union gave a lot on this whole this whole PED thing, because they wanted stuff like this to go away. And that's where Tracy got into the conversation. And then he said, you know, the problem you're going to have is, even if this guy produces everything, then if you're the union, you start asking for his financials to prove that these people paid him. And mm-hmm. did he actually claim this on his, you know, and then that gets him in trouble there. And then from there if all that's the case, then you start bringing up inconsistencies that put his credibility in question, and can they stand up? So more than likely, Ryan Braun's going to walk again from what should be a suspension. But it'll be interesting to see this unravel, because, I mean, there was like 12 players named. It'll be the largest suspension in the history of baseball.
It's crazy. It's such a weird situation. I was looking a little bit at it. You know, it kind of started out with stuff with Manny Ramirez. I mean, the guy who ran this clinic, it's the Biogenesis Clinic in Miami, he was involved with Manny Ramirez when he was getting suspended, it seemed like 2 or 3 years in a row, for different things before they updated some of the PED rules within the CBA and their programs. And so, yeah, they came out with that list of, you know, the notepads of people's names, and they were using fake names, and there were numbers signifying cash payments and things like that. And then baseball was trying to sue to get the records that the Miami News Times had received and unearthed from a former employee. And then they were trying to buy them, and then they were trying to sue them and buy them. And, you know, they were trying to get as much information from these guys as they could. And then finally, the guy, this Anthony Bosch, is the director of this clinic, finally is kind of decided to cooperate with them just so they'll drop the lawsuit. So, I mean, you know, that kind of right there, after he denies everything over and over and over, now he's, you know, going to admit and tell them what he can. I mean, that everything seems really seedy about it. And, there's, you know, some of the big names, Ryan Braun, Alex Rodriguez, Milky Cabrera, Nelson Cruz, Bartolo Colon, some of those guys. I mean, it's going to be a blemish. And, you know, you get tired of hearing about this stuff, and it comes up so often, and I don't know, you just get disillusioned with it, because it sucks to have to hear about it. And it sucks to have to hear about the investigations. You know, I just kind of want them to go out and play the game, you know. But, you know, there's financial futures at stake in this. And if you're a guy who is going to toil away in AAA and you see a quick fix to catch up with or, you know, step over somebody else, a lot of guys are going to do that. And if that involves cheating, well, you know, you're going from making, I don't know how much they're making in AAA, but $50,000 a year to $450,000 a year. A lot of people are going to do that, and clearly a lot of people have.
And our good friend Ryan Verdugo remarked about that. So
yeah,
of course, the only drugs he's using is the powers provided by him by the wizards of Harry Potter and what have you. So
Hogwarts.
Yes, Hogwarts. There you go. I couldn't think of it for some reason because that's how I roll. But he said, that's weird. More athletes cheating to get paid huge sums of money. You don't say.
Yeah, go figure.
At Teach Me to Doogie 11, that's D-U-G-I and the number 1-1. So definitely follow him. I don't know if he ever makes it back to the Royals, but he is worth the follow anyways. And he's an all-around good guy. So
yeah, he's a good dude.
And then Jason Adams tweets once a day now. I don't know what to do with myself. It's just, how can I stalk a guy that doesn't tweet enough to stalk? So
it's a good question. I don't know how you do that.
But on that note, I think we're going to get out of here. Remember, we got the trivia question. What Royal drafted in the 1997 expansion draft for the Arizona Diamondbacks? What Royal was drafted by them but never played one game with the Diamondbacks? So figure that out. At KansasCityBaseballVault@gmail.com or at RoyalManReport@gmail.com or hit up either of the business Twitter accounts at KCBaseballVault or at Kings of Kaufman, and we will get gift certificates out to you. Right now, all I have is Kelly's, but I am working on getting some Blanc stuff, so maybe that'll make people message in a little more because they'll want free burgers versus free beer. But I will be back in October. If you want to have a beer with me, we're coming back for my birthday the weekend of the 5th or the 8th. There will be lots and lots of free booze that the night that we get out to Kelly's. So
half our listeners, their ears perked up.
Right. Hashtag free booze.
I wonder if there is a hashtag of that. I ought to check that out.
Hashtag Royal Men Pays Your Tab. So we'll get that figured out. And remember, if you see at TroyOF on Twitter, it's just me. Don't worry about it. And if you don't want to follow me, that's okay too. I don't really mind. But on that note, Mike, you got anything else?
Well, I don't know if we're going to have this up in time, but the MLB draft is tomorrow, or it starts tomorrow. Royals pick 8th. It's a really, really tough spot to kind of project who they're going to take. If I had to make a prediction, I would say they're going to take Braden Shipley, a college pitcher from Nevada, related to Jordan Shipley, former Texas Longhorn receiver, former Cincinnati Bengal. Really good in PPR leagues if you play fantasy football as a kind of a sleeper. But no, Braden Shipley, I'm just saying. Probably not now. He's been injured a couple of years. But Braden Shipley, converted shortstop. He's about 92 to 95 mile per hour fastball. Changeup's his best pitch according to Keith Law. But there's a lot of other guys, and it's a weird draft because there's not that number one guy. You know, there's not that obvious pick like in, you know, the Bryce Harper or Steven Strasburg years. So things could unfold in a lot of different ways. But the Royals, generally, I think people think they're going to take a pitcher, most likely a college pitcher. But, you know, we'll see. Probably by the time we record the next show, we'll know who they've selected, as well as the rest of the draft. Thursday is just going to be the first round. So, you know, you're probably listening to this and already know who had that. But, hey, what can you do?
And if you are in fantasy football, do not take Titus Young. He will never play in the NFL again. 13 criminal offenses in like a 2-week span. It's he's a winner, kids.
I had him on my team last year. He had like 3 really good games, and I didn't trade him because I thought he was going to break out, and then he got hurt.
I mentioned on Twitter about this sick Seattle White Sox game, which now has moved into the 13th inning.
Sure, why not?
Or 14th inning, I don't even remember now. Oh, somebody just got a double. Yeah, top of the 13th, 2 out. White Sox have a man at second. So maybe they'll finally get some runs. But it's funny to see people's responses on Twitter. Mark of the Buzz, I think that's, yeah, Mark of the Buzz, he works for 96.5. He said, another wasted quality start from Iakuma, I hope I'm saying that right. He's getting the Shields treatment. James Jason Tyree said at from at Tyree Studio, he said, kind of got a same tweet from him and MD Johnston, Johnston. MD Johnson 22. They both, James said, sounds like both teams are going Royals on offense, and Michael said, sounds like a Royals game. So the fan base definitely just taking their whippings right now with these lack of scoring games, and it is what it is, kids. Hopefully they get going. But, I mean, I was low at 81-81 when we all did our predictions over at Royals podcast, and everybody was saying how negative I was being, and man, we're 10 games under 500 now, and the Royals are showing no signs of life, so we'll see what happens, but it's going to be interesting. And then there's just a real quick note, because I want to get out of here because I got to get over to Taco Bell because it's free tacos because the Diamondbacks scored 6 yesterday.
What?
Here in Arizona, if the Diamondbacks score 6, they don't even have to win. If they score 6, then you get 3 free tacos from Taco Bell, and if you want to make them all 3 a Supreme, it's $1 more. And that's called getting it Miggy style.
I was actually more surprised that a team can score more than 6 runs.
You know, they did, and they gave up 6, too, and then so they had to score a 7th to win the game last night in the 14th inning.
Unfortunately. That must have taken, like, 17 singles.
But I'm not leaving my Royals fandom. I'm just integrating into the locals fan base because if you guys have ever hung around with me, you know I'm a sick sports fan. I just love sports, and I don't know how to do anything but love sports. And so living here in Arizona, I've got to be a little bit into what's going on here. And it's funny, too, because all these people that follow me, you know, their hashtags will be like Diamondbacks, Coyotes, and then Cardinals. And I'm like, oh, another Cardinals fan. And then I remember not those
yeah,
Cardinals.
The Cardinals. Yeah.
Yeah. The ones that are very bad at sports too. So, but you know we'll probably talk about the Diamondbacks, and that's actually where I was going to. The reason that I found the trivia question is because I was looking up. You know, the Diamondbacks have made the playoffs 5 times since they came to be in 1997.
That's a lot more than the Royals.
And not only that, do you know that they spent $80 million this year? No, I'm sorry, $90 million this year on salary. The Royals spent 80. It's not a money thing, people. It's a lack of administration, and they wanted everybody here fired at one point. And this team is you know running with big dogs like the Giants and Dodgers, and they're doing it. And you can't call Phoenix a small market by any means, but
it's not LA, it's not New York, it's not Chicago.
It's not a baseball market. Yeah. People don't want to go outside in the summer here. It's 110 degrees in Phoenix, where I live. It's 80, but you know it's. In other parts of this state, it's so miserable. I mean, Megan and I drove down just, what was it, an hour towards Phoenix, and it went up 20 degrees. So, I mean, it's crazy hot down there, and I want to go down to some rookie league games, but, you know, it's going to be 110 degrees during those games, and those are outside. At least with Phoenix, you've got a closed roof. So, but that's the reason I had found that trivia question today to begin with, is because I had looked up how many times they'd made the playoffs with a team that doesn't do a lot of money. So it's not money. It's not ownership. It's lack of it's ownership and the effect
players.
That they haven't. Yeah, he hasn't put in the right people in the jobs. And Dayton Moore looked like the right guy after Allard Baird. And,
sure.
But year 7, year 8, year 9, I'm not willing to
you
wait
start
anymore.
To
it's
see
time to move on.
The, you know, those little differences over long term, they start to peek out even more and more, and you kind of see it. I think people are they're done being patient, and they're done giving them the benefit of the doubt.
It's definitely a negative world, and that's okay because it's what it needs to be. So, anyways, I'm gonna get out of here.
Go get free tacos.
Out of here. Yes, I'm gonna go get some free tacos. Jeff is hopefully gonna have his household soon, and we'll be rejoining the program. Boy, when he gets back, he's gonna have a lot of anger to get out. So. The Jeff Furr rant might be incredible, but follow him at the Jeff Report. Follow us at Troy OF and at Mike Lingle. Until next week, go Royals.
What you trying to be yourself for?
Bird up.
So do you want to do this or what? You just, like, not take my call?
I don't know what was happening. Everything was just going really, really slowly. And so it was catching up, and then you said you're ringing, and then it finally popped up and showed that it was ringing, but I wasn't getting any sound, so I had to go check that, you know, so I just restarted and just There it is.
There you go. I upgraded on Skype too, so you know that that's a recipe for disaster.
Oh, good. It's always good to change things just before we do something.
Well, I did it like 2 hours ago, but I, you know, I can't test it till I call you. So
right. How are you hearing me? Is that all right?
Yeah, you sound good.
Should be louder. Or?
Yeah, you're much louder.
Okay. Yeah, I got one of those microphones. So
yeah, I know.
It's awesome. I don't know if it's awesome or not, but it looks cool.
This is my microphone. It's spiffy.
Yeah, I was like, I can't find the same deal on Amazon. I just happened to be looking at the right time because I got it one day and it was like $70, and I looked the next day and it was like $105. I was like,
yeah,
what the hell is that? But
so a quick out of the park note, my team like fell apart 2 years ago and didn't win the championship in our league or in the unified championship. Where all the division winners get to go. And so the next year I was like, okay, got to get everybody healthy. I got into the 40-day roster period, and I, like, benched all my starters, played all the guys that were brought up from AAA because I was already going to win my division, benched everybody, get to the playoffs healthy, just wipe everybody out, get to the end of the unified championship. And I run up against the Cubs, who have Tris Speaker and Ty Cobb.
Oh, that's a good combo.
Right, takes it to 7 games, and I win in the bottom of the ninth. My 9-hitter, a catcher, succeeds on a hit and run with one out to win the game and win the championship. So then in the offseason, the Cubs sent me a trade offer, and it was for other people. But I seen what they wanted for Cobb and Tris Speaker, and I was able to get both of them. They're both on my DL. Cobb's on my 60-day DL, out for 5 months.
Did they even have the 60-day DL back then?
Well, I've integrated a few other things.
Yeah.
You know, because if baseball's not going broke, they would have went faster through some of the rules stuff. But nevertheless, anyways, let's get on with this.
Okie dokie. Put things in whatever order you want. And I got tons of tabs open and stuff, so I'm ready for whatever.
That's what she said?
I guess it's possible.
I did talk to I texted with Danny Duffy today. He's getting on a plane, or he would have called in.
Yeah, he's in Omaha.
Oh, is he really?
Yeah, he tweeted at one point. He was like, Omaha bound, and that was all it was.
So, like, okay. I missed that. So I'm glad you caught that. So, okay, I know you put a list together. Where the hell is it?
Okay,
oh, here we go. I found it.
You got it? Okay.
Yep. Okay. In 5. And welcome into the Kansas City Baseball Vault. I am Troy Olson. I'm, of course, joined by my good friend, Michael Engel. Mike, how you doing today? Mike?
Oh, I thought you... I didn't hear you. Start over.
Awesome.
Like, I don't know if you asked, how are you doing, or if you just
left
it.
That's exactly what I asked. I don't know if my cat muted it or what.
You cut that exact sentence off, so I was waiting for it, and then I was in that awkward... Crap, I know he probably asked me that, but now he's going to ask me again, and I'm going to talk. Anyway, let's start over.
Okay, here we go. It says Joe Randa in the first pick of the third round.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That. He must have retired right after or something.
Let me
double check.
They blocked
it. I don't remember him playing on the D-backs. But that doesn't mean he didn't.
My computer has been really weird on searches lately, and I'm not getting any of the stuff I want. Here we go. Let's check here. Let's do a little baseball reference real quick. Because I think his last number is with the Pirates, too. No, because he played... That was in 97. Shit, he played... That can't be right. No, he must have been traded immediately because he played... Okay, let's look at this. He played for the Royals.
Drafted by the Diamondbacks from the Pirates as a 57th pick, traded the same day with Matt Drews and Gabe... Oh, he was trading for Travis Fryman. Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Okay, because he never actually was awarded a number.
Yeah, he never played for them. He was just drafted by them.
But yeah, so he played for he was number 18 for Kansas City in 95, and then he moved to 16 until 2001, was 16 for the Pirates in... See, and this is screwy too. He had like 1 year in the way that Baseball References the numbers kind of screws things up. He had 1 year with Pittsburgh in 97. He was drafted by the Diamondbacks, and then in 98 actually played for the Tigers. Then went back to Kansas City, apparently, and then was with them for a while again, and then went to San Diego, Cincinnati, and the Pirates.
Back with the Pirates. I don't remember him in San Diego either. That's weird.
He had 58 games there, 241 plate appearances.
Yeah.
Batted 256, 303, 395 for an OPS of 698 and an OPS plus of 89.
He was a perfectly average player.
And a really nice guy, too. I met him and told him my story about getting pictures with him on opening day when I was completely trashed.
No, was that the Scotch Day?
That was the Scotch Day. And I told him that story at one of the things and for the Historical Society, and he laughed. He's a good guy. He gets it.
He's a ball player. So
played all over the infield too. First, second, third, DH.
He's a really good third baseman.
It shows him as a DH for the Pirates in 2006, so he played 3 games at DH. Apparently they were the interleague games. 15 games at first and 42 at third, his final season. Anyways, let's get back to the show. I'll have to edit that out. We'll make that note that he never played
Just tack it on the end. Yeah.
See if they're really listening?
Just put like 10 minutes of outtakes, just for the hell of it.
Okay, so, and we're back in 5, 4,